This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora, e te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. This is the show that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. My name is Sue, and thank you for tuning in and joining us from around the motu in the world this evening. Hey, joining Mike and myself in the studio tonight, we have Kevin. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing, Kevin?
I'm well, thank you.
Wonderful. Lovely to have you here with us tonight.
It's good to be here.
I understand that you've done the radio show before.
I did. I did it probably a couple of years ago.
Okay. And that went okay? Went smoothly?
Oh, yeah, fine. Yeah.
Fantastic. We'll see what happens tonight, I guess. let's start with the show. And we start with a good introduction, but it just kind of sets the scene. Alcoholics Anonymous is a service based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics. We do the work through the 12-step program where recovering alcoholics support each other who want to stop drinking and where we learn how to live life. We do the mahi together and work through the 12 steps. In the rooms of AA, by sharing and listening to the main theme of recovery by way of the AA program, each of us has finally recognized that we are no longer able to handle alcohol and that we need to stay away from it completely. The most important thing is that we also realize that we don't try to deal with the problem single-handedly.
We bring the problems out into the open
rescue
with
me.
Other alcoholics.
For me, working the AA program is a daily practice of being invested in recovery. Living sober each day allows me even to be here tonight with two excellent fellows to talk through how we continue to explore and what it means to live life for purpose and how we may handle difficulties or surprises that come our way. People come into the rooms with a range of experiences and thoughts about their life problems with alcohol. That's the AA rooms, of course. Even though each one of us has different reasons, there is one common bond, and that is we have all had a problem with drinking. Whether that's by how much we drink in terms of volume or frequency, or how our dependency on alcohol has become problematic. Take it away, Mike.
So we like to start each meeting by reading out the AA preamble, which gives you a good idea of how we work. Kevin, would you be kind enough to do the honors tonight?
I will, thank you. My name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kevin. Hey, Kevin.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, Kevin. So just to make it clear, we are all members of AA, but what you hear from us tonight are our opinions, and they're our own opinions rather than the opinions of AA itself. So we have guests who are invited to share their story and experience, but as a whole, it's just us, three recovering alcoholics, talking about different aspects of our recovery.
Yeehaw!
And so shall we rip into the daily reflection?
Yeah.
So we have a text in the fellowship, which is a book of daily reflection. So there's a short reading for each day of the year, today being Tuesday the 19th of August. A frame of reference. Referring to our list, it's our inventory list, again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Alcoholics Anonymous, page 67. There is a wonderful freedom in not needing constant approval from colleagues at work or from the people I love. I wish I'd known about this step before, because once I developed a frame of reference, I felt able to do the next right thing, knowing that the action fit the situation and that it was the correct thing to do. So that's our reading for today.
That's great. So that sort of, I guess, fits in with that framework of step eight.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're aligned, the readings, each month, and might just recount that. So step eight is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So, Mike, have you got some thoughts on those, and Kevin?
Yeah, I guess I think maybe, well, for me, I'm speaking from my own experience, but I think that it probably generalises a bit to people across the rooms, is that I came into the room with quite a lot of shame and guilt, and a lot of that was to do with my past actions and things that I'd done and the ways I'd harmed other people through, you know, through my behaviours, you know, many of which stemmed from, you know, my problem drinking. And so making a list of, the idea is that as we work through the steps, step eight, we make a list of all the people that we'd harmed, and we become willing to make amends, and then eventually we go on in the next step to make amends. So I think the idea is that we sort of clear some of that debris that we, you know, some of the wreckage that we made, and it kind of frees us up a little bit to walk around a little bit lighter. That's my take on it.
I always caution, particularly new people that come into the program, to be sensitive and discuss it with their sponsor about making amends to people. I made a big mistake when I first got into AA. I went and tried to make amends to a boss that I'd created a bit of problem with. I'd been working for the company for a number of years, probably 8 or 10 years after I'd started with the company. And I'd been a problem for him, and I tried to make amends to him. And it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
He spent the next, until he retired, aiming to fire me at every chance he could. Fortunately, I was working in a union job, and I had the union behind me. And every time he tried to do that, the investigation would prove that I was not, you know, particularly at fault or anything. So it was a mistake trying to make amends that quickly with someone like that. So I always caution people to always discuss that with other people in AA and your sponsors. People are usually very gratified to feel your amends when you do that. And another thing I like to say is it's easy to apologize. It's another thing to ask for forgiveness. You know, can you can you forgive me for having done that? You know, a lot of people can't do that, and that's okay. But you know, that you have to move on. So that's my take on that step.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, the process is fundamental, isn't it? And I like your advice on running through the list with your sponsor and creating a bit of an order.
Yes.
For me, I looked at, had a list, and it was from kind of really quite heavily derived from step four, sort of threaded through.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sort of could work out whether there's family or friends or workplaces, you know, into categories. And then I was advised to maybe do one that wasn't as, what would I say? How would I say it? Not an easy one, because they're not easy, but one that was more sort of straightforward and one that I could handle it. And then I had to write that out and almost practice that with my sponsor.
Yeah.
And so that really set me up, and boy, I was so nervous. But it was really extraordinary. And it was with a previous client of mine, because I had, through my alcoholism, had like let them down, you know, and hadn't performed on time, sort of had all these different ideas all the time instead of sticking with the design they wanted. You know, the classic move from someone that was had really big problems with, well, I should talk on the first person with my life. So, and that was, yeah, it was very emotional. And but I'm stepping into step nine now. But yeah, good one, Kevin. It was good to start on the, like a little step first, and then sort of work into these more significant ones, I guess.
Yeah, and step nine, I think what you're saying, Kevin, ties in a bit to step nine because it does, the next step, step nine, talks about making amends except when to do so would harm them or others. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about that? Do you think that, I mean, we're jumping ahead a wee bit, but do you think that that others, do you think you should include yourself when you think about others?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you always think about, you know, potential harm to yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you could run into a pretty severe backlash, you know, trying to make amends from someone. And that could be very hurtful. And, of course, if you're not solid in your situation, you know, having a sponsor and being a regular attendee at meetings and things like that, having your sobriety secure, you could drink again, you know. You could be hurt. You could be hurt severely by someone who perhaps you may have done something severe to them, and now they want to do something severe to you.
This is right. This is true. And I hadn't – I sometimes mention this, and I, in my early days of AA, I thought I had to, like, chew through step nine really quickly because I couldn't go on to step 10. But and so the – you know, I learned by going to the meetings, you know, going to the and understanding what's going on because you're sort of just working out the rhythm of what's happening. And then some, people out of the country or there's all sorts of reasons. So it's a work in progress. That's what I understand.
It's sort of a lifetime's work, is it? Is
it yes, it is. Yeah. It can be a lifetime. Mm. Yeah.
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 Oh, good stuff. Did we want to have a look at a song? Have you got a song for us? I think you had some Miles Davis lined up for us.
Sure, if you want to play. Miles is one of my favorite artists. Fortunately, he's no longer with us, but his music lives on, you know.
Sure does.
And this is from his classic album, Kind of Blue.
Yes.
So you've chosen the song So What for us. Thank you.
unfortunately, right. Can't hear it all. Then.
I know, we've had to cut that track short. That was a full 9.5 minutes, but...
They got sort of 6 minutes of it.
Oh,
just did all right.
How kind, yeah. So, Kevin, I thought, as we like to do in these little interviews, is just to ask you, because I've known you in the AA rooms, especially the Tuesday evening meetings, which is that's how I've got to meet you, which is fantastic. We always love to ask, you know, how did you arrive in AA? In terms of what, where were you in your life?
It was kind of funny. I was at a family reunion, and this is kind of a downer, but my next younger brother drowned at our family reunion. And the family handled it the way they handled most crises. They drank, and me included. And after 2 days of serious boozing, I needed to do something about it. And I had a friend that had a print shop, and I knew that the AA intergroup office was next to his print shop. So I knew where it was. I'd heard of AA in my life, you know, growing up. But to me, it sounded like people used to talk about AA like they've gone into a monastery or something, you know. It was kind of strange. But anyway, I walked into the AA intergroup office, and there was a group of guys sitting at a table having coffee. And I sat down with them, and I expected to get a lecture, but they ended up telling me their stories. And I just had to sit and listen to them, and it sounded a lot like mine.
Yeah.
And then they reminded me that there was a meeting going to start in about 2 hours on the other side of the building. They had a storefront meeting room. And so I went over there and went through my first AA meeting. And unfortunately, and this happens to a lot of people, they get, when they really feel bad, they get into AA. And after about 2 weeks, they say, oh, I feel pretty good. You know, I'm health has come back a little bit, and I could have a drink, sure. I could have a – and that all it takes is that one drink. Mm. And then, of course, I have one drink, and I can have two, you know. Two's good. And then you may stop there, but then the next day you say, well, I handled that pretty well, you know. I have and then you got some guests coming over for dinner, and you open the bottle of wine to have it breathe. And before the dinner arrives, you've breathed the life out of it. You've sucked it dry, you know.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes, and it went that way for me for a couple of years. And I finally, every time I'd feel healthy again, I'd start drinking again. And I finally signed myself into a treatment center. Fortunately, I had a friend that recommended. He happened to know the guy that was running the Metropolitan Alcohol Abuse Council in the town I lived in, Orlando, Florida. I called him up. And he says, you don't want to come here. This is a pretty rough place. He said, but I do know a center that I can take you to. You want me to pick you up? And I kind of hesitated. I said, well, no. He says, I'll pick you up. And he came right out. He was there within half an hour or so, and he drove me out to this other treatment center. So that was pretty good. And I stayed sober after that for 18 years.
18 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
But unfortunately, the last, you know, after about 12 years or 13 years, I felt I'm cured.
Mm-hmm. Stop going to meetings?
I stopped going to meetings. Yeah. I stopped going to meetings, and I kind of drifted away from AA, you know. Mm-hmm. The people I knew, the sponsor and everything, I just drifted away. And I managed to stay sober for 5 years because I was caring for my wife, for one thing. She had ovarian cancer. And it was one chemo treatment after another. And the short story is she passed away, and a month later, after all the business of the funeral and everything has gone away, of course, I was still no longer connected to AA. And, you find yourself alone and grieving. Mm-hmm. And I drank again. Mm-hmm. And boy, I'll tell you, that set me off on a trip that I don't ever want to take again. I thought I'd hit bottom the first time around.
So it just really accelerated.
Yes, it was really bad. I actually had a couple of visits to hospitals to get detoxed, and signed myself in. This is in the United States, of course, but Yeah, they have a program. They have a thing over there called the Baker Act, and you can't be held in an asylum or a treatment center or anything like that more than 3 days. And they call it Baker Acting yourself. You can Baker Act yourself, you know. In a mental institution, they can't keep you if you're not a danger to yourself or to society. They have to let you go. That's the rule. That's the law. And it's the same thing there. But Baker Acting yourself means you ended up in a hospital someplace, and usually a mental ward.
Locked in.
Well, yeah, you can leave anytime you want. But technically, after 3 days, you know, you got a choice. You can either, you know, go into a treatment center or leave. And I actually Baker Acted myself once, so that didn't work, you know. You get sober after 3 days, and all you want to do is drink again, you know, that sort of stuff. But it went on for a couple of years. I really got to a low bottom, and I've been sober for quite a number of years now. I've been 16, 17 years sober, I usually tell people the most important thing about AA is to keep going to meetings. You don't want to give up meetings, you know. Like a friend of mine in AA up in Ashburton once said, he said, people ask me, why do you have to keep going to those meetings? And he would ask him, why do you have to keep going down to the pub every week, you know, and spending all your time down at the pub? It's the same thing. After a while, you get to make friends in AA, and you want to see your friends again, you know.
Absolutely.
They may live, you know, you may only get to see them once a week. Some of them you see more often. You know, if you attend more meetings, you see people that – I used to go to meetings in Florida. I used to go to 5-6 meetings a week because I had friends there, and we'd go out and have coffee and dinner afterwards or something like that, you know. So it was quite – there's not that many meetings around here in Dunedin or Mossgill, you know, but – there's enough.
It's enough, though, right?
There's enough, yeah. Mm.
And it's amazing the amount of people I've met, you know, just within the last couple of years. It's been, you know, it's been fun. It's apart from being completely nervous and freaked out at the beginning, you know, and everyone would smile at me and you know, the classic mantra, like, keep coming back. We'll see you next week, so we'll see you tomorrow. So it was like, yeah. And then, and that really helped.
Keep coming back, yeah. That's the motto, yeah.
And so you learnt from your previous relapse. So so you still manage to come to meetings when you can through the –
Absolutely. That's one thing I would never do is give up going to meetings again. You know, that was a big mistake. That's what led me back out again. It was stopping going to meetings. I hadn't been to a meeting in 5 years when I drank again. Wow. And that's what hurts, you know. You have all that time, and you know, of course, you know, it's still one day at a time. I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, you do it one day at a time, and surprisingly, the days build up the months and years, you know.
And have you had that opportunity of sponsoring? Do you go through and sponsor other people?
I've offered. Yeah. I had one fellow that asked me to be a sponsor, but unfortunately, I didn't see him again. He came to a meeting, and he asked me to be a sponsor, and you know, and that's another thing. It's not the sponsor's job to keep chasing you. You know, it's your job to keep in touch with your sponsor. You know, a good sponsor is sympathetic and knows what your needs are. But you know, it's not his job to keep chasing you and keep after you. It's your job to see him, call him.
That's right. Yeah,
I like that. I like the thing that you shared about your friend sort of talking about. You wouldn't think twice about going to the pub, you know, several times a week. And you'd probably go for a lot longer than 1 hour, and you'd probably spend a lot more than the $5 or whatever you put in the seventh tradition as well. So, I hadn't actually really ever thought about it that way. But when you make the decision to become sober, you know, you then realise how much socialising that goes on is revolved around drinking. So you have to find some social... You know, you've got to – socializing is important and connection is important, so.
The surprising thing is it's remarkably shallow, the sharing that goes on in pubs and things like that. You know, People don't, they talk sports, or they talk, hunting or whatever, I like to hunt, those kinds of things. But and those kinds of conversations go on at the pubs. But you don't get into real serious things, you don't get into real deep sharing with people, unless you have maybe one good friend or something like that. But it's when you get to AA and you make good friends in AA and you get a sponsor, you really develop deep, long friendships.
Hmm. Yeah, because my experience is even when you go to meetings, you meet people, and even some of the people that have got really strong sobriety or long sobriety, and they're traveling really well, and then they might dip down and they're just feeling sad, or they're not having a good month or a week, or might be longer, and they can share that, and you can see that sort of unity come back together, and that sort of really gives you that sort of swelling or ability to pick back up.
Yeah.
So
I am in touch with a couple of friends from AA in the United States still. Mm-hmm. I haven't been back there in 2 or 3 years, and to see any of them. I did go back once this year for a short stretch, but I haven't been back to my old AA meetings. And I still keep in touch with them, One of them has passed away, wonderful lady. But she was in AA. I think she was celebrating 30-some years when she finally passed away. But one of her things that everybody would always shout it out at the end of the meeting before she could get to it, but because she always closed her sharing with a grateful alcoholic will not drink.
And that's become your catchphrase.
It is, yeah.
Tuesday nights,
I do everything I can to spread that little thing around. Yeah,
definitely stuck with me, that one. I actually said that to myself the other day. I didn't want to drink, but I just thought, God, what's some of these good little codes I can fit into my head? And I thought of you sitting in the meeting, not quite in the lazy boy, but, having this sort of wealth of experience that is really quite magnetic.
Gratitude is a good part of it. See, I mean, it's given you a new life, really. It's given me a life like a lot of people will say beyond their wildest dreams, but not beyond my wildest dreams, but it's beyond, what I ever thought it would be. Gratitude is important. I have a lot of gratitude for what I have. I've got a sober life, and I and a lot of friends and a lot of connections, and I do a lot of things. Like this morning, I was at the gym, faithfully. I go gym every week, several times a week, and things like that. So I've got that kind of thing going. When I was drinking, I would have never thought of going to the gym.
Right.
It would have been, would have been out of the question.
more of a liver workout possibly, and active drinking, than any other kind of physical workout. Different kind of endurance.
Yeah, that's interesting, that gym analogy. Yeah, I've almost got a reverse story, because I would almost go to the gym to conceal, I guess the use of alcohol. So sort of ironically quite fit,
Oh, that's another thing.
It was weird. It was just like, okay, I'm going to go and ruin myself perhaps, or, be quite intense, like evening life. And then, up we get in the morning, off to the gym, maybe the sauna, and then sort of rinse and repeat. So I can't believe it, really.
Lying and dishonesty is another big part of it. You don't like what you've become when you become a serious hard drinking alcoholic, and then there's blackouts. And a lot of people, blackout is not a pass out. Blackout is when you may be functioning. You may look like you're only slightly drunk, but if you're in an alcoholic blackout, you don't remember what you've done. And there's horror stories of people who have committed crimes and done all sorts of strange things while they're in alcoholic blackouts, and they have no recollection of what they did. People have taken trips. There was a guy who took a trip to Europe, and he didn't believe he went. He went to Europe and back, and didn't believe he'd gone. until people showed him his tickets and his reservations and everything. Another guy was in Las Vegas and spent time in Las Vegas and came back and never remembered it. You know, to spend a whole week in an alcoholic blackout. Hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's happened to me. It's happened to me over a period of a day or two, you know. And then the worst thing in the world, I can remember when I was my late wife, when I was married the first time, 36 years I was married. I'll give you an idea how old I am. But the worst thing in the world is I didn't want to hear, do you know what you did last night? Mm. You know, God, that struck terror into your heart. You know what you did last night? Oh, and you had no idea what you did.
Yeah.
Scary. A bit scary.
Hey, should we try another little track? Have you got one lined up there?
Yeah, so I think we had something.
These are all by Kevin, by the way.
Yeah, Kevin's the music director this evening.
Yeah.
So you've got a song from this doo-wop collection, I believe.
This is the Four Seasons' first big hit. This was one that made them started them on the road to their stardom. Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, and this was their first hit, and. I was recently graduated from high school when this happened.
And so this is Sherry by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Welcome back to AA Live. So, Kevin, what do you think has been sort of the most? You talked a bit about, you know, having a life beyond your wildest dreams. Could you dig a bit into that and let us know what sort of things have you experienced in sobriety that you never really thought, that, you know, the really unexpected and the really positive things that have come out of.
Well, the biggest positive, I'm living in New Zealand. I remarried. I married a Kiwi lady, lovely lady, that I knew from long ago before I was married the first time. And I've remarried, and I'm living in New Zealand, which is wonderful. I never dreamt that I'd be able to live here because I loved the country the first time I came back in the 1960s. Mm. And having the opportunity to come back and live in the country was something that I never thought I'd be able to do. And, you know, we own a home. Just a lot of things.
Cool.
It's just living a normal life and having a lot of things to do, you know, around. And people think retirement is a lot of laying around. I'll tell you, I've never been busier.
It always seems I can't wait for retirement, but it seems like the time that you can really do
doesn't exist.
I think of retirement as the sort of the time where you can actually do all the things that you. Yeah, I can imagine I'd be busy in retirement, but I'd be doing things I wanted to do rather than.
I had to do. That's how I ended up in New Zealand, because I retired first, you know, and I thought, well, I always loved New Zealand, but I never had the opportunity to go back because it was so far away, you know, and you need a month or two, you know, and when you're working, it's hard to get that much time. And that's what spurred me to come back to New Zealand. And actually, I came back the way I came the first time. I came back by ship.
Right.
came back on a container ship.
Yeah, right.
They carry passengers, some of them.
Yeah.
And came back on a container ship.
That's a bit interesting way to travel.
Yeah, it was, yes. Yeah. They talk about a stateroom on cruise ships on a container ship. I had an apartment.
Right.
I had a three-room apartment.
Well, you're making it sound luxurious.
Yeah. It wasn't luxurious. It was plain Jane, yeah. You know, but and there's not a lot of activities. And people say, well, you know, why do you do that? I mean, there's no casinos. There's no midnight buffets. And I says, yeah, there's no casinos and there's no midnight buffets. It's a lovely way to travel.
Yeah, cool.
Unfortunately, now I'm too old. They won't accept me on because they don't have any medical facilities or anything like that. You know, they take younger people, but – I heartily recommend it.
Yeah. That's cool.
I'm scheduled to go on another cruise coming up next year.
Right.
So you still got a love of the sea?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I always love the sea.
So you're going on a cruise?
I am going on a cruise in March of next year. Mm-hmm. And that's something I always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. It starts in Buenos Aires and goes around to Santiago, Chile.
And how many people will be likely be on the cruise ship?
This is a Holland America ship, and they normally carry around 1,800 people.
1,800, yeah.
They limit. It's not one of these big monster super cruise ships. They're pretty moderate size. You know, they're not a small ship, but they limit them because
And how do you plan to sort of stay connected? I mean, if you indeed plan to stay connected to the AA program while you're working your recovery while you're away?
There's meetings on the ship.
There are meetings on the ship.
Yeah, right. I was wondering.
And they're in they're in the daily bulletin. When you're on a ship, on a cruise ship, your cabin steward slides it under your door before you go to bed at night. You get a daily bulletin for the next day. And there's always listed on that daily bulletin, Friends of Bill Wilson, our Friends of Bill or something like that, or Friends of Bill W. Will be on that ship, and they'll meet in a certain meeting room on the ship.
And so even on a 1,800-person ship, there's still a meeting.
Yes,
that's
some
pretty, that's
really
cool.
I think the ratio of alcoholics or people in recovery would be about right.
The meetings.
But I think of a tiny town, you know, I think of imagine a tiny town with a population of 1,800.
A floating tiny town.
Well, that's it. You'll have a half a dozen, maybe 10 people or something like that at your meetings and stuff like that.
Yeah, cool.
But you get something on a cruise ship you don't get at the regular meetings. You get fresh flowers in the room.
Yep. Yeah.
You know,
some fruit.
Yeah, a bowl of fruit, things like that. Yeah.
You get the snapped old chocolate biscuit.
It's wonderful.
Cold tea.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. And so how often would there be a meeting? Would there be one every day?
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah, every day. Yeah, it's available every day. You don't have to go to every day. You know.
I assumed that there would be something like that on the bigger ships, but that's really neat to know that they're even on a smaller ship, they still have such things.
Now, the least I've had is like three persons, you know. But at least you're connected with somebody in the same program, you know, and you can talk, you know.
Yep.
You know, you get conversations.
Cool. That's really neat. And so when you first were in the rooms, were you in Florida? Is that where you first found AA?
Yeah.
And how did you notice many differences in fellowships sort of internationally, and maybe you've been to other countries as well, but how do things compare?
They do carry on in different ways. Like in New Zealand, they'll tend to call on people to talk.
Mm.
I don't know whether it's shyness or what it is, but in the United States, they'd open the meeting and they'll ask, does anybody have a topic? Anybody have feel like they had a need to drink today or anything like that? And somebody will usually come up with a topic of some sort. In New Zealand here, we read the Daily Reflection. But some meetings in the States will do that. Every meeting has its own character. Mm. But generally, they will just start the meetings and say, okay, the meeting is open.
Mm.
And somebody will just pipe up. They'll say, my name is so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic, and they'll bring their issue up, whatever it might be,
mm-hmm.
and talk about that. And that just leads it off, and other people will start talking. Then if it's too quiet, if it goes beyond, a couple of minutes, you can count to about 20 before somebody will start talking.
Mm.
But if it's too quiet to say, okay, I'll go around the room and I'll just talk on the first person. And anybody that doesn't want to talk, of course, they just say, well, I'm so-and-so and I'm just listening today, kind of thing like that.
Yep.
So you're not forced to do anything, there's no compulsion.
Yeah, it's interesting. I go to another 12-step fellowship as well, and the way they do it there is that they'll ask – one person will be asked to open the meeting, but then it will just be opened – after one person's opened, it's just open for sharing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting the way different meetings get carried out.
Yeah, it depends on who's chairing the meeting too. A lot of times, like if I was chairing the meeting, I would do that. I would say, does anybody have a topic, anybody have an issue that they want to talk about? And usually get somebody, that wants to talk about something in particular.
Mm.
The downside of calling on individuals is, number one, the chairperson has to know their name, and a lot of times you get a fairly large meeting and a chairperson, they may not know that person's name. They can point to them and say, would you talk, something like that. But smoother or whatever. If you have people who want to talk, they have something that they want to talk about. They have an issue. They want to get advice. They want to hear other people's. Like one of the things that comes up once in a while at an AA meeting is non-alcoholic beer.
Mm.
How do you feel about drinking non-alcoholic beer? And some people can't take it. Some people who were big beer drinkers in their life. They're the wrong person to start drinking a non-alcoholic beer, because they're gonna switch.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much of a temptation. But a person who wasn't a beer drinker, they might find it okay to have one. In a social situation or something like that. Non-alcoholic wine, I guess, is the same thing.
Mm.
I've tasted both.
Yeah,
but that's about it.
Yeah, I have drank some non-alcoholic beer. When my ex-partner, she would drink, not very much. She was definitely not an alcoholic. And she would drink, it sort of made me envious, because she could have one drink, once a fortnight or something like that, or, maybe two drinks, but it was sort of, that was it. And on some of those instances, I'd have a non-alcoholic beer in the fridge just so I could, I don't know, there's something communal about sharing an activity together or something like that. It didn't really trigger me to, but everyone's different, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because while we're on that topic of sharing in meetings, like the zero alcohol beer or those types of things, there was a newcomer that was in the room maybe about 6 months ago, and he was working in a job and he was working in a bar or working in a kitchen.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, yeah, but I need to work in this job and, I want to get sober and... everyone was really polite in the room, but there was this kind of awkward, not awkward, but sort of intense sort of silence, because it's just like, maybe rethink that, maybe that's not going to work out for you in terms of still being, when you're freshly coming into sobriety, how How do you manage when you're looking at green bottles or, you know, or screwing caps? Even the sound. Some people just get triggered by the smells, bottle top.
The smells, the top. Sounds. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I don't think that's going to work out for you.
No. Working in a bar sounds very difficult.
The longest and strongest sobriety that I've seen in one person that I know back in the United States was a guy named Vince, and he had been a welterweight fighter, and he worked as a bouncer in several of these topless bars that we had in Orlando, South Orlando, and he was dead solid, the best sobriety I've seen him over the years. I mean, I know this guy from a long time, you know, because he comes from a family of coal miners in Pennsylvania, and he's a real tough guy. But he's a little guy. You wouldn't think of him as a bouncer, you know, because he's tough as nails, and he works around the booze all the time, you know, He says when he first started, he says he'd see these guys leave a half a glass of something sitting on the bar. Hey, man, what are you doing? You know, it's like.
So you know, still quite obsessed with it in a sense.
Well, when he first started with it, you know, it's like, you know, an alcoholic would never leave a half empty glass of wine or something or beer or whatever they're drinking, whiskey or whatever. You know, they never leave half of it laying on the bar and walk away. You know, you got to finish it, you know. It's this compulsion there, you know.
And have you traveled to other countries around the world and been to meetings?
Yeah, I've been to meetings in Latin America. I didn't understand what was going on, but they were very happy to have me, you know. And a few guys that would have some English, you know, they would explain to you what the problem was going on, what's going on. I've been to meetings in Hawaii. I've been to meetings in Australia. English language meetings, obviously, and I've been to meetings in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Ireland has one of the oldest temperance movements in the world. Father Matthews has got a statue of him in Cork, Ireland. He started the first ever temperance movement among the Irish.
Right.
It was called Taking the Pledge. And you pledged not to drink until you were age 60.
Right.
But obviously they do not have a alcohol-free place in Cork in Ireland.
Yeah.
No.
I think there's a statue of them in Dublin, too, you know. So it's pretty interesting that, you know, that the Irish seem to be known for their drinking, you know. But this fellow saw a need, and he created an answer for it,
right?
Which was good.
And is that quite heavily connected to the Christian faith? It would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it is. Because he was a Catholic priest that founded it. Yeah, I don't know what his last name was or anything. I've seen the statues. I've been to both Cork and Dublin, and seen the statues. I've done a lot of traveling because my late wife and I owned a travel agency.
Oh, now the truth comes out.
I mean, I worked for the railroad, but we owned a travel agency, so we did a lot of traveling, a lot of cruising and stuff like that.
Fantastic.
Good stuff. Hey, we're going to wrap it up fairly soon, but before we do, and we're going to play one last song as well, but what do you think, Kevin, what would be a take-home message for a newcomer? What would be one sort of piece of advice that you would offer them from your experience?
Well, if you've already decided and you're in the meetings, just remember that it's the first drink that will get you drunk, because that first drink throws that little switch in your brain. There's something genetic about being an alcoholic. There are people who drink heavily for years and years, and if the doctor says, okay, you have to stop, and they'll put it down. They just follow the doctor's advice and stop drinking, and they can do it. It's not a problem for them. But if you're an alcoholic, there's something that goes on in your brain, okay? And you have that drink, that alcohol hits that little switch, that little part of your brain that knows all you want to do is have another drink. You know, you feel good, you want to feel better, you know, and you keep going. And you know, ultimately it doesn't work.
Mm. Yeah, ultimately.
So.
Yeah, it catches up with you, and everything is just.
The first drink will get you drunk.
Mm. Awesome.
One is too many, and 1,000 is not enough. Mm.
Hey, well, thank you very much for coming in and sharing your experience, strength, and hope, and your excellent music taste.
Pretty eclectic.
Yeah. And on that note, you've got one last song for us to go out with.
As Time Goes By.
So this is As Time Goes By, performed by Dooley Wilson.
Dooley Wilson, famous song from the movie Casablanca.
And after that, we'll be back just to check in again before we depart.
But fantastic. Yeah. Let's have our final track. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Joy to be here.
Yeah.
A kiss is just a kiss, a sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you, on that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs, never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman need man, and man must have his mate. That no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will all.
So thanks everyone for joining us tonight on ALive, and thank you very much, Kevin, for your time and sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. It's been great to have you on board.
It's wonderful to be here. I really enjoyed it.
Wonderful. And just one last thing for all of our listeners, that if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, that's ours, so we can help. And there are two ways to contact Alcoholics Anonymous. You can call 0800 226 757, and I believe that line is, there's somebody at the end of that line 24/7.
There's definitely someone on. Yep, they can provide help.
Yep.
Talk you through it, because we had Rowan on last time that was explaining that process.
A suggestion on that is don't call when you're drunk.
I was going to say that, but it's great that you do call, actually, because you call and then it can be tempered on the other end and a plan made.
Yeah, but if you've already been well into it, you probably might not even remember that you called.
But it might be the best mistake you've ever made.
That's true.
The New Zealand website is www.aa.org.nz, and that's worth having a look at as well. There's lots of meetings, times and locations for all over the country. Thanks very much. Take care of yourselves, everybody. Until next time. Matewa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.